Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel. Joining me over the phone, thank you, Lisa, for being over the phone with us, because I know you're coming to town. Lisa Campion, who's got over 30 years as a psychic and energy healer, she incorporates psychic readings, energy work, spiritual counseling into her sessions. She also specializes in empowering and training psychics, empaths, and energy healers, and she's the author of the upcoming book, Reiki for Psychics and Empaths. Welcome to the program, Lisa Campion.
Thank you, Jen. I'm so happy to be on your show.
So I've been inhaling all of this information about you over the last couple of weeks since we've had this on the calendar. But for the listeners who aren't familiar with your work, talk to me and to us about how you first discovered that you had these abilities.
Well, I was one of those psychic children. So way back in the day before it was like hip and popular to be psychic, you know, I was born in the 60s and 70s and could see things other people couldn't see. And I really think that it came about for me because I had a twin brother who died in utero. Mm. And, you know, you're connected as twins. And when he passed, that solidified that connection for me.
Did you know that you had that twin? Or you were told, obviously, when you're old enough to absorb it? Mm-hmm. Or could you see him from the get-go?
Sort of all of the above. Mm-hmm. So I remember, as an adult now, I remember the experience of him going. Mm-hmm. When I was like little, I had this imaginary friend that was my brother, whose name was William. And I was probably like, you know, kind of like 4 or 5 years old. And I was talking to somebody and my mom said, "Who are you talking to?" And I said, my dead brother, William. And she was holding this glass, and I'll never forget it. She dropped the glass and like ran out of the room. But I didn't know until I was older that had happened. So,
got it.
Yeah.
And so for you, I talk a lot with parents who have psychic children, empathic children, intuitive children. I think we all are to a degree, but I think especially right now, it's coming. It seems to be coming at like a fever pitch. Would you agree?
Absolutely, yeah. I would absolutely agree, and I think that people are getting more psychic. I mean, I think people have always been psychic. It's just part of our human condition. It's part of being human. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I make a little distinction between psychic and intuitive.
Sure.
So intuition is really like our own sense, like our own, you know, wisdom. And it's the wisdom of our body. Mm-hmm. So, and our emotions and our sense of knowing. And then psychic is really like when we get information from outside our own system, when we're speaking to guides or other things out that are outside of us. Mm-hmm. And I think really everybody is both psychic and intuitive. And I guess the analogy that I like to use is that it's a little bit like athletic ability. Uh-huh. So everybody's got some, and some people have more than others, right?
Sure.
But even if you have a lot of natural ability, you still have to train it. You still have to work it, you know, and that's why psychic development works, because it's like a muscle that you practice, and when you practice, it gets better.
And for some people, that's a different process. And I'm sure you find this out in your, you know, 30 years of teaching or many years of teaching. But for some people, they like to hear things. Some people like to visually see things. Some people need to actually physically do it to incorporate it. So talk to me about how you help train people differently to tap into these skills.
Well, that's a great point. And I think that everybody has, you know, we talk about the psychic senses.
Sure.
So there are like visual psychics, auditory psychics, kinesthetic, which is in the body, psychics, empaths, which are much more emotional. And, you know, knowing what your strong suit is, like what is your open channel, is the best way to develop. So if you're a visual psychic, you may also learn visually. If you're an auditory psychic, you may also learn from an auditory way. Mm-hmm. If you're a kinesthetic psychic, you may need to do, like those are people that touch things and get psychic readings. So I think the best way to develop is to lean into the strong one you already have. Mm-hmm. And practice with that, keep it going. Over time, often what will happen is if you do enough psychic practice, your other psychic senses will really open. And, you know, eventually you get all of the, you know, you have all of your channels open, which is really kind of a trip.
So, yeah, exactly. You have all the party favors going at one time. You're a combo platter of all sorts. I have a good friend who's very intuitive. She gets the clear audience. So, but because we've become friends, I feel like her ego gets in the way a little bit. And so so sometimes when we talk, it's almost like she can't read me as well because she knows all the layers behind it. Instead of just saying, this person, I see an Aries coming in, She might put the filter of, oh, you know that guy you mentioned, blah, blah, blah. Is he an Aries? Because I think he's going to do da, da, and da. Do you find that that ever happens to the people that are close to you in your life? Or do you just really have it, you know, hunkered down so that you can discern the difference?
Absolutely. And a lot of that is because when we are emotionally involved, we lose our connection.
Yeah.
So when we're emotionally triggered, I mean, she loves you, so she's emotionally involved with your happiness, and we don't get a clear read. It's also like why we can't read for our kids, our spouses, ourselves, you know. And when you don't have a trigger around it, it's why it's easier to read for other people, especially people you don't know very well, because you don't have an emotional charge around whatever their thing is for the most part.
Right.
So we get a nice clear reading. And if you are finding you have a trigger or something, that's when divination tools come in handy. So I like to teach my students, at least, you know, encourage them to get really adept with at least one divination tool. Maybe it's a pendulum, dowsing rods, tarot cards, angel cards, runes, something that when you lose your center and you get triggered, you know, is my child, I have one of my sons is in the Marine Corps, and I'm like, is he okay?
Right.
You know, like there's no way I have a clear channel on that issue because how could I, right?
Right.
So I pull cards, and, you know, I find that they don't lie. They're more reassuring, and we just have to do that if we get triggered around something.
You know, even with the pendulum, I'll find that I can manipulate it based on what I want because our energy field is so strong. You know what I'm saying? Like the cards are really the only thing that I can get to neutral with. And it's interesting you bring that up, a tool, having another tool. Some people I know use stones and some people use the tarot cards or the angel cards or what have you. And some people do depend on the pendulum. But I think that even that can get kind of weighed down with energy. Isn't that right? Don't you have to clean some of the tools? Like if you have rocks or a pendulum or some of those things, don't they need to be taken care of? Sort of like when you get your oil changed in your car?
Totally. And as far as pendulum goes, I like metal ones, copper, bronze. The best pendulum I ever used was solid gold, but I'm not really recommending that because it's so expensive, but metals are more inert and they give you a cleaner read. Whenever you do pendulum, because pendulums with crystals in them, crystals tend to have a mind of their own, you know?
Sure.
I find that some people do really well with pendulums, but you have to be very, very, very good with the yes-no questions. And, I mean, I don't know about you, but my life cannot be boiled down into yes-no.
Right.
Nobody can. I mean,
no.
Life is all too complicated for yes-no.
Yeah.
And when you're using a pendulum, you ask your question, and then you always have to ask the pendulum, do you know? Does the pendulum know? Because the pendulum will give you, like, okay, are the Patriots going to win the you know, the Super Bowl?
Right.
I'm a Pats fan, so that thing's going to, you know, say yes.
Right.
Then I say, do you know? And the answer is no, because there's no way that a pendulum could know that, because nobody knows that until 3 seconds before the game is over.
And that's because of free will. Exactly. And at any moment, things can change. So there's well, first, before we move off the pendulum, do you believe, Lisa, that we have to hold them in our left hand? Someone told me you should never put them in your right hand because that's the moving forward and the left is receiving. So do you have a preference on which hand you hold the pendulum in?
I always use my right hand. But I often close my eyes, especially if I feel like I'm going to influence it. If I have a strong feeling about it, I'll rest my elbow on the table, and I'll hold the pendulum. You want to hold it loose. You don't want to wrap it around your finger. And, you know, I do think you're right about clearing it, like saging it or putting it in the sun is quite good. You ask the question. You ask the best yes or no question you can, and then do you know? And I do think pendulums are useful for people, emerging psychics, mostly to get like a second opinion on your hit. Like, so this just happened to me today. One of my clients called me and said, there was something in my room last night. It totally freaked me out and I didn't know what it was. I was freaking out. And I was like, okay, so like, let's get your pendulum out and we'll see what it is. And was it human? Yes or no? You know, okay, so it was human, male or female. Like she was asking questions to kind of verify her own experience. And in this case, the pendulum agreed with her assessment and agreed with my assessment. So in that moment, she had a really good learning experience of what it feels like to have a real hit.
Right. And for those who aren't familiar, yes is a circle clockwise to the right. No is left, right, like shaking a head no. And I've also, Lisa, gotten straight up and down, which to me means it's not my time to know. It's not something I need to know right now. Have you ever had that?
Yeah, sometimes my pendulum will just vibrate without moving.
Yes.
And if it's vibrating without moving, it's reading the energy but doesn't have an answer. And I also think you can ask. So when you get a pendulum, you can say, show me yes, and it will, mind goes round and round. Mm-hmm. And show me no, and mine goes back and forth.
Exactly.
But I don't think it's true. That's not always necessarily true for everybody. So when you get a pendulum, you can say, show me no, and it could be something else, you know.
Might be something else for somebody else. Yeah.
Right.
And it's interesting, too, because every time I show this to people, they think I'm moving my hand or making it up. You know, it's like, you do it then. You do it yourself. You hold it and you see. It's so hard. Why is it so easy for people to accept the fact that they can sit in their living room and some signal will come, hit the dish on their roof, and then come down into their home and project a TV signal, but this kind of talk they think is weird? Why is that?
Well, you know, I'm not sure I would believe in this stuff either if it didn't happen to me on a regular basis since I was little.
Right, right.
You know, and I think we believe what we experience, you know, and I always respect skeptics. I think that skeptics, being skeptical just means you're intelligent and thinking for yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and I don't expect anyone to believe anything that they haven't experienced themselves.
Sure.
I do appreciate people with an open mind. You know, you can be skeptical and have an open mind. Still like, okay, well, I haven't had that experience, so I'm kind of skeptical, but I'm open to maybe that's real, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that would be like your TV analogy. Like we don't know why electricity works or TV works. We know that we can have a lot of open-mindedness for experiences we don't understand,
sure.
you know? And still, I think even so, it's really a good idea to continually run things through your own filter and see if it's true for you. And even though I'm a psychic and I channel, I sometimes don't, I wouldn't say I don't believe what comes out of my own mouth, but I continue to do that. I continue to be in a way skeptical about what I'm saying, because even the best psychic in the world is only accurate 80% of the time on a good day.
That's right. And that's, you know, all of my psychic friends predicted that Hillary would win, and that didn't happen. So let's talk about what you're seeing and feeling for 2017. You know, there's a lot of things that could go one way or the other. And I think there's a lot of fear happening, which is another wonderful fact that you're coming to Chicago for a workshop. This is going to be at the Libertyville Civic Center on Saturday, January 21st, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's in Libertyville, obviously. So be sure to sign up for that with Lisa. But you know, for the rest of the year, what are we going to do? You're coming here in January. That will be very helpful. But a lot of people need some serious healing here. What do you think is going to go down in 2017?
Well, I have to tell you, I'm one of the psychics that predicted Trump was going to win.
Oh, awesome.
And
okay, cool.
I didn't want to believe it because it's not my jam, you know? And I would be like, no, you're gonna be kidding. And I would get it over and over again. And when it happened, there was a part of me that wasn't surprised.
Sure.
But it was really like not before, it wasn't until like a few days before the election that I feel like the wind changed on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel like the wind changed on that. And, you know, I was talking to my guides about it recently, just kind of like, you know, what's the deal? Why is this going on here? And what they explained to me, I thought was quite interesting, that if you look at the history of our country and maybe the history of civilization in general, there tends to be like, but particularly to our country,
mm-hmm.
there tends to be like a pattern of moving, and they showed me a vision of an image of like a ship tacking across a harbor.
Sure.
So things move to the left and then move to the right and then move to the left and then move to the right. And that's actually what creates forward motion.
Sure.
And if the ship was only ever turning to the left, it'd be going in a circle.
Right. Of course.
Know? Because we live in a world that that is about duality and polarity, like the nature of our planet is to be, you know, well, there's a couple of things going on here. We have polarity, duality,
mm-hmm.
we have free will, and we have a physical body. And as far as I can tell from my guides, that's the only place in the entire universe that has those three things happening at once.
Mm-hmm.
And so people come here to experience choice.
Yeah.
And not in a good or evil kind of way, but what are the results of cause and effect is another thing, operating factor on our planet.
Sure.
So what are the results of our choices?
Mm-hmm.
And that our country is very polarized, yes. Very, very, very split into mm-hmm. two distinct polarities. And so the people that voted for Trump have been as miserable as we are now for the past 8 years with Obama,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the ship tacked one way and now it's going to tack another way. And if it continues to go that way, hopefully we move forward. Mm-hmm. You know, we continue to move forward. That's the way that I think my personal feeling about things is that we have a choice. We can dive into the polarity, which is basically against being, when we're against something, we're always in our ego. We're always, it's like our part of our defense mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
When we're for something, we're actually in our soul,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right.
So thinking about what you're for and taking a stand for what you're for is a much more powerful spiritual stance than what you're against.
Exactly. You know? Yes. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Deepak Chopra. There's a lot of polarity
yeah.
now.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know, against this, against that. And mm-hmm. it's really just like a tennis match then bouncing the ball back and forth, right?
Totally. Yes. Deepak Chopra said, look, the universe doesn't know justice and what's right and what's wrong. It just knows hate and love, and it knows the vibration. And so if you're standing there protesting for peace but spewing hate, you're still adding to the hate vibration, you know,
right.
even if you think you're right. But, you know, love is the only thing that puts out the fire of hate. That's it. It's the water that puts out the hate. So all these people are going to be protesting when Trump, you know, is inaugurated. And I'm spreading the word. I have a bunch of friends doing a call to action. This author friend and intuitive Therese Rowley, she's putting a call to action to ask people to send love from their heart to Trump at 2 p.m. Eastern instead of hate and screaming, to try to raise the vibration, because as the Dalai Lama said, I believe, in 2009, it's the Western woman that will change the world. So maybe that's what we can do, rise up and spread love from our hearts so that we can put this fire out with love. Do you think that's possible?
I do. And we just had Martin Luther King Day,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yep.
And this is my favorite quote of his. I've decided to stick with love. Hate is too great a burden to bear.
Yeah.
You know, and I do think there's something beautiful about, you know, Martin Luther King Day happening right before the inauguration. And it's his stance is a good reminder of how we can create change in the world using that vibration of love rather than the vibration of hate.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea of praying for Donald Trump. He's got a very hard job in front of him
mm-hmm.
For the next 4 years, and we're stuck with him. So
yeah.
We better, you know, so, like, and when I say support him, I don't mean we have to agree with him or we have to love what he does, you know, but I do think that there are ways to express yourself. You know, like the classic thing, like you go to a peace rally, not an anti-war rally.
Right. Well, just like you said, Martin Luther King, you can stand for justice with peace without raising a weapon.
Yeah.
Just like Gandhi did. You can stand up for what you believe in, but you're not screaming hate and venom. You're standing there like an oak tree rooted deeply in the ground, believing in what you believe in, but you're also emanating love and grace. And that is what I think we are missing right now in this world, is what you just said, the tennis match. It's just going back and forth and nobody's going to win. And you can keep spiking that tennis ball over the net harder and harder and harder, and people are going to hit it back harder and harder. And so, you know, I like to give it the analogy of a child, and you're a parent, so you can understand this. When a child is screaming and kicking, which is all bullies are doing, is really they're upset, right? They're mad, they're scared, they want people to like them. So that's what bullies are doing when they're screaming and kicking. So if you see a screaming child, what are you going to do, kick it? You're going to kick a child while it's down? No, you would scoop up that little baby that's crying hysterically and try to rock it quiet, right? Shh, 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 right? Try to soothe it to submission. And that is the only way we are going to beat all this hate, I think, is to soothe it into submission. And like you say, it's not letting them roll over you. You're not condoning crap. You're not condoning injustice. You're just choosing a different vibration.
I totally agree with you. I love what you said. And I take my sort of personal feelings out of it, I think it's very interesting. Like I find curiosity and interest to be a way for me to get untriggered.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very interested. I feel like Trump is a paradigm smasher, mm-hmm. and that he came in with this like giant, you know, hammer, and he's going to demolish. He's like a demolition guy.
Right.
And
a bull in a china shop.
Boom,
boom,
yeah,
boom, boom, boom. Yeah.
Boom, boom, boom.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to demolish And I think there are no sacred cows. I think nothing is sacred. Mm-hmm. You're going to demolish everything that can be demolished. And that's what's going to happen in 4 years. So by the end of 4 years, we're going to be left with sort of a bare, like what the bones, mm-hmm. whatever's left is standing, you know, mm-hmm. after those 4 years. And there, and I think on both sides of the right and left fence, there's stuff that needs to be demolished.
Agreed.
You know, there are programs that don't work. There are structures that don't work. There's corruption on both sides of the aisle. You know, and I'm like, I'm curious to see what the demolition will look like. Demolition is never an easy energy to live with. Mm-hmm. It's really scary for people.
And also, I think what this has done too, Lisa, and tell me if you agree with this, is what we are realizing now, and I think a lot of people were in the dark about how hateful and scared and racist this country really is overall. It's like pulling up the rock and you see all those bugs under the rock. And what this is doing is pulling up all the rocks and shining a flashlight on every nook and cranny that is this great country of ours that's diverse and varied and scared and hateful and loving and all of these things. It's the ultimate combo platter. But we have to shine the flashlight on all of the pieces so we know exactly what we have. It's like when you take your purse and you dump it out, you're like, oh my God, I forgot about that pen. You know, we have to put it all out on the table. So then, like you say, after 4 years, we can decide what we want to put back in the purse, because not everything was working. It was just making it really heavy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. That's a great analogy. And I think sometimes, because I'm a healer, I think about, if you, like you said, the person, like, you know, if the country were a person, this would be a healing crisis. Mm-hmm. And our country has some pretty funky karma, because it was based on, I mean, there's a lot of wonderful things about our country, but the wounded side of the country is that it was based on slavery and genocide.
Right.
And every, and that's heavy karma for a heavy karmic burden for a country to carry, just like it would be for a person. And every once in a while, we have these forays to more sort of more conservative. So we had McCarthyism, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the ship tacking one way. And then the next decade we have the civil rights movement, you
sure.
know?
Yeah.
And that's, and every time these things happen, like with the Civil War and the emancipation of slavery and with the civil rights movement, you know, women's liberation, we have an opportunity to heal the rift that's in our country. And we do some, it gets a little better, a little, you know, maybe just a little mm-hmm. better. And then that issue kind of goes underground again and festers. And like you said, needs to come up and get handled now. And I think there are times when that reaches a crisis point, like it has many times, you know, mm-hmm. at the Civil War and at the Civil Rights Movement. And now we're due for another one. And I pray that we can find a way to really heal the problem at the core. So that we can right the wrongs and bring everyone into a good place in our country.
There's a lot of things that we can do with prayer and intention, but we really can't undo the things that have been put into motion so deeply. Like you talk about, this country was founded on all of these karmic things that are going to be very hard to unravel. And so we do have to try to change. It's like the water going down the drain. We have to try to change the momentum the other way. And I do believe that it can be done with enough of the will to get it done with that higher vibration. And that's what it's going to take. And all these kids, I think, coming in now are very critical for that pendulum to sway the other direction, or the boat to turn in the other direction. So as a parent, and for all those parents out there that are listening that might have children that are sensitive, I know a lot of people, and I disagree with this at this time in my life, but I know a lot of people are just grabbing medication and medicating their kids beyond recognition because they just don't know how to cope with their sensitive, empathic children. Sometimes medication is needed because of chemistry in the brain. I'm not saying all medication is unnecessary, but I think in the society today, it's a grab-and-go thing, just like diet pills used to be in the 70s and 80s. What can we do instead of grabbing pills and medicating our kids to help them cope with their gifts and help these parents nurture their children's gifts?
That's an awesome question. And I love working with parents of kids. I don't often work with little kids myself. Sometimes I do if they're super psychic.
Right.
And I love working with teens. Teens are, you know, young people and teens. I work with them directly. And I often train mm-hmm. the parents of empathic children. I do think, like you said in the beginning of the show, that there are even more sensitive, you know, every generation, as far as I can see, it comes in a little more sensitive than the one before it. Mm-hmm. So there's just this wave of like a tsunami, really, of sensitive kids. And I think, thank God, because, you know, they're the ones, like, I really see empathy as, and sensitivity as sort of the highest sign of spiritual evolution. Like when we become very spiritually evolved, we become more empathic,
yeah.
you know? And when we're super empathic, we don't hurt other people, mm-hmm. you know? So all empaths are nonviolent, mm-hmm. and a huge tsunami of empathic children are going to grow into sensitive and empathic adults that will hopefully steward our country and our world into a different direction. And I really feel like that Trump, I mean, I think Trump, he's 70 years old, right? So yeah. he's sort of on this wave of older, the old white men in suits that are kind of had their heyday and are now sort of, you know, dinosauring out. They're, you know, de-evolving out. And I've met a huge number of young men in their 20s who are super spiritually advanced, super spiritually evolved. And another tsunami of, like, the millennials have come here. I think they're the next stewards of our country and of our planet. And they are, like, you know, the grooviest, hippest, you know, people you're going to meet. And so I feel quite hopeful if we can kind of make it through this demolition derby that we're, you know, scheduled for the next couple of years, we'll get to the point where these more sensitive ones are going to take over. And I find that quite reassuring and hopeful.
Yeah, actually. I hope so. I mean, I've had a lot of experience with millennials and some of them are really kind of entitled, and that's a problem. But at the same token, I then will meet three more that will work their fanny off and you know, not expect yeah. to be making $50,000 a year when they're 20. So this yeah. is hopeful. And my son is 10, and he cried when kids smashed their pumpkins after the, you know, they were rotted out and all the kids went in the alley and they were taking their pumpkins and they threw them down, and Britt did it. My son did it just to do it. And he started to cry afterwards. It's like he just smushed his friend, you know?
Yeah.
And I know he's one of these kids, and he's been able to see my father, who passed away 4 years before he was born. So it's one of these challenges, though, for him, is that he's afraid to talk about it. He doesn't want people to tease him. He's afraid they're going to think he's weird. And you know, from growing up with this, when you were a child and dealing with your psychic gifts, how did your parents react to your growing gift as you kept developing it more and talking about it more at home?
I was lucky. My parents were hippies. So they
cool.
they were super liberal and crunchy, and like they took me to transcendental meditation when I was 10 because
Woo!
It was 1974, and that's what you did when you were a hippie in the, you know,
right.
1974.
Right.
So I don't think they knew what to do with it, but they didn't squash me.
Yeah.
I mean they scratched their heads a little bit, but they didn't squash me. I did, you know, work recently with somebody who grew up in a very from an immigrant family. She's from Portugal. And her mother was super religious and took her to the priest when she would do things like that. And mm-hmm. like the priest is like throwing holy water on her and, you know, trying to exorcise the demons and stuff. And
right.
I think it can, you know, there's a whole spectrum there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in your case, for your son, I think the most, and I'm sure you already do this, but the most important thing I think we can do is normalize it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we provide a context for kids to understand it. And I encourage parents to work with whatever context their faith tradition provides them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're from a Catholic heritage, you can talk about the angels and Saint Michael and Jesus and, you know, or whatever faith tradition you belong to help your kids understand, oh, you have angels around you. And yes, there's sometimes you see something scary, but there's also an angel here with you you can call on who's always going to help you. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, give them a framework for understanding what they're experiencing and normalizing it is really important.
Yeah, and that's really important too. What I'm doing that with my son is, you know, I interview a lot of people like you, and he likes to come and listen to them sometimes, but then I can see that it gets him a little anxious because he's wondering if that's, you know, quote, normal. I mean, he literally said to me once, "Mom, your job is not normal." And I'm like, "Honey, that's not true. My job is really fascinating. I interview a lot of different people. Some of them are lawyers and mayors, and some of them are psychics and healers." It's just all over the map. But it's important to have these conversations because nobody is the same. Not, I mean, twins are even a little bit different, but no two people are exactly alike if you want to look at this melting pot that we have here. And just to give him the context that for him to see his grandfather who died 4 years before he was born, and, you know, he explains it to me that it's like a glowing yellow light. So for you now, Lisa, when you see something, is it as clear as Technicolor, or is it sort of like a blurry light, but then intuitively you know, or psychically you know who it is that's coming forward for you?
Well, when I was little, I would see things with my real eyes, which mm-hmm. with my eyes open,
sure.
you know, that's called physical. It's like physical mediumship.
Yeah.
And I never liked it. I still don't like it when mm-hmm. that happens. I find it very disconcerting. So I tend to see things with my inner eye, the psychic eye.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned a habit now of keeping my eyes open, seeing actual reality, mm-hmm. solid reality, plus this superimposed image on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I get, you know, also a sense of knowing, and I get hearing. I'm kind of getting it on all channels.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of, you know, I guess the closest way that I can explain it, it's a little hard to explain, is this, if I was looking at you, I'd see like 10 TV screens behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is playing your past lives, and one of them has your father on it, and one of them is what's going on for you medically. And another is like what maybe is in your future.
Got it.
And so sort of tuning in to which channel I want to, you know, look
open
at
up,
on
yeah.
those. Is like, are we going to do ghost TV or past life TV or angel vision or which channel, you know? And it's a good analogy because it is like switching a channel into these different
things. Can you do that over the phone as well?
You bet.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Would you mind dipping into my TV channels for a moment, since we have yet to meet and I haven't yet to experience your gift, so that our listeners can get a gauge for how that goes down?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you had a, no problem. And you had a question maybe about what's happening next for you in your life professionally?
There's that. I also have a medical question. If you do get that medical TV, I didn't realize that was an option, which is very cool. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the menu grows and grows.
Yeah, which one is more interesting to you?
Oh,
you, both?
You know what? Work, I think, is always more interesting.
Well, here's what I want to tell you, and I don't know if it's a good answer, but
okay.
It's what's coming.
Okay.
And that is that you are, you're a very spiritually powerful person yourself,
mm-hmm.
and your guide, I see a guide standing behind you, and he's telling me that there are times when you, I don't know how to put it, like you stand behind your radio show
mm-hmm.
In a way that's kind of protective, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it may be time for you to find ways where you're more out in front,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense to you. And that also, and it's, I mean, radio is an awesome medium. It's a fabulous medium to get out and about. But I think that it's you're a very talented and spiritually aware person yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Finding something that, where you're not just interviewing luminaries, but you are becoming a luminary. You are a luminary and you need to own that in a way that you haven't in the past.
Right.
And that what I see for you is that part of it's a wonderful and annoying, so congratulations, and I'm sorry,
mm-hmm.
that you're at a point in your spiritual development where you can choose,
mm-hmm.
you know? So like newbie souls have a lot of fate in their life.
Right.
And as we spiritually advance, we earn more and more free will. And you're at a point now where free will is open to you.
Mm-hmm.
So what, you know, I get a little bit of a question back, like, what do you want to do? What you could create pretty much anything you want if you really set your mind to it. And maybe thinking about how to step out in front of people in your own right mm-hmm. might be the next thing. And I feel like amount of interviews you've done and the contact you've had with some really amazing people has rocket launched your own progression, your own spirit. You've done some quantum leaps in mm-hmm. terms of your own spiritual evolution since you've been doing the radio show, and it may be time to stand on your own.
Yeah.
On your own pedestal in a way, if that makes sense to you.
No, it's just this work and these conversations I feel are really important, like to the world, right? To the universe, to everything. And it's really hard to find a medium, right? to get on board with that. That is the struggle right now, Lisa, is that, you know, while I love doing the podcast and I love being, you know, I love my videos and I love writing my books and all the things that I do and the live shows that I do, you know, it's time to get somebody like at a CNN level to understand this importance. Right. I mean, everywhere I go, I get more and more people emailing me, telling me how important this is and how their kids are psychics or intuitives and they want to talk about it, but they're afraid to. You know, there's a mainstream radio show here in town. I wanted to promote one of the events I have you know, the Bodine family coming to Chicago, Echo Bodine, Michael Bodine, Nikki Bodine, all from Minnesota, and they just don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. And I think that's fear. So it's trying to crack the code of fear, Lisa, that is really, I find like walking uphill with an anvil tied to my ankles. Do you know what I mean?
I know, and God bless you for doing it. It's sort of like, you know, you're really bushwhacking. So when we bushwhack, we step off the trail, and you've got to go with a machete, you know. Yeah. And as you're going through, like, whacking through heavy jungle with a machete, you're forming a trail so other people can walk behind you.
Right.
And I feel like this is a very important part of your journey as a soul, your karma. You know, you have a little, you know, sort of past life history. When I look at your past lives, like as a traveler, a visionary, a groundbreaker, an explorer, mm-hmm. you know, a light bringer. And you are doing the 21st century version of bushwhacking through the jungle by the work that you're doing and
right.
creating a pathway that other people who don't have the capacity to do that, because most healers are too sensitive, most psychics are too sensitive to, you know, withstand mm-hmm. that, or sort of an icebreaker is sure. kind of the other image I get. Like you're breaking, you know, a path to the ice and other ones are going to follow behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, that this was this is a huge part of your mission here. Like you volunteered, you came down here with a strong purpose to create an environment that would be to bring that light in a time that's kind of dark down here.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of dark underneath those rocks, Lisa. There's a lot
yeah.
of maggots under them too. It's really unfortunate, and
yep.
it seems like the maggots keep rising to the top, you know. And the light workers are struggling, like you say, bushwhacking all their way down at the core. And it's exhausting sometimes. But I know it's important work, so I'm not going to stop, and I'm not going to stop having these conversations that sometimes make people uncomfortable. I'm just not, because I know these need to happen.
Adding your own two cents and adding your own wisdom, like.
Mm-hmm.
Don't discount, and I don't think you do, but
yeah.
there's kind of putting an emphasis on don't discount your own wisdom, because
right.
it's considerable, and your own wisdom is a gift to the world.
Well, thank you. If I could tack that on to seeing dead people and predicting the future, then I'd be golden, but yet that has not happened. You know, literally some people are like, oh, Jen, what are you feeling right now? I'm like, dude, I interview psychics. I am not yet one. I mean, we're all psychic, but I don't see dead people. Okay. I just interview people who do. And that's,
but
you
I'm
know.
Sure you're quite intuitive and,
yeah.
you know, you read people.
Yeah.
So understanding people, reading people, knowing the right question to ask, you know, like having the quality of discernment, which is like, you know, when somebody's you know, when your BS meter is really
mm-hmm.
high,
oh, yeah.
You know, you have the quality of discernment. And so your psychic is all just geared towards reading people.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and that's a perfectly amazing psychic gift.
You know, it really came in handy when I was a columnist for the Chicago Tribune, and also when I was a reporter with CBS, because when you're going out and you're trying to find a story, your gut is taking you turn left, turn right. I got a good feeling about this guy. I got a bad feeling about that guy. I mean, this happens all the time in work. The Hilty hunch is what Conrad Hilton used to call it. I mean, it was all okay to put under the power of positive thinking by, you know, Norman Vincent Peale. But by golly, if we say psychic or intuition, everybody runs out of the room screaming.
Well, let's think of a new word.
Okay.
Like, let's invent it. You know, maybe you can invent a new word for it that doesn't have so much of a trigger
mm-hmm.
or a charge around it. And I think people do get triggered, because psychic is one of those words, like love it or hate it. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a long kind of history way, way, way back in our grandparents' age of charlatans and hucksters and tricksters who, you know, were gave legitimate psychics a really bad reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know what to say. It's just the way it is. It's
yeah.
We have to carry the burden of that, and maybe a new paradigm or a new word or a new way to look at it would be a good way to move forward.
When you were training for this, or rather I would say like deciding to become a professional at this, you know, was there a time where you were doubting, I'm going to do this full time, or did you keep your other job? Or how did you decide to just jump and the net will follow?
I've never had another job.
Okay. Well, there you go.
yeah, except as a writer.
Okay.
I spent quite a long time as a freelance writer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. I've never done anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't know why I thought I could do this. Like, I was 19 when I started doing readings for people.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the height of the new age. It was like 1987 or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And I worked in a New Age bookstore and a lot in Northampton, Massachusetts, and a lot of really famous people came through there and did workshops and all the books were there. And I think, honestly, it was only because I was 19, and when you're 19, you just don't know better. You don't know any, like, well, I can't, sure, I can do that, you know?
Mm-hmm, sure.
And I started doing it because I didn't know I couldn't.
Right? Exactly.
And then by the time I figured, like, years have gone by and I've done so many sessions, but there are still times like when I, like if I take a long break on my first session of, after, I'm like, oh, I wonder if I can still do this. Is this still going to work? Is this going to happen? That does sometimes happen to me. And I've also learned, because I've done so many sessions, to have faith that what the session comes out the way that it needs to, the client hears the information that is appropriate, and I disconnect a little bit from the outcome. So I'm like, all right, well, that's what happened. And like maybe like months later, a client will call me and said, you know, when you did, I thought you were so full of it when you said X, Y, and Z, but it actually happened.
I tell people to always record every session. And just because, you know, let's talk about free will. When you do a psychic reading and you say, you know, I'm seeing this job for you in 3 months, you know, at any moment we can just pick up the phone and go to Jamaica and derail everything, you know. So
absolutely.
Who knows what's going to really happen. But do you find that if you see something really soon in somebody's trajectory that it's probably absolutely going to happen? Like you said, 3 days before the, you know, election, you felt this Trump wave of momentum. Do you think that do those usually pan out when it comes to looking back at your track record?
I would say so, and I always say it's a bit like predicting the weather.
Sure,
you know, like we can accurately predict the weather right now by looking out the window. You know,
right.
And you and I can accurately predict what's going to happen in the next 5 minutes because we just can, right?
Sure.
And the farther you go, so when I do predictive work, I get the information in terms of probabilities, and I always have. So my guides will say 82% probability that X, Y, and Z happens. And 82%, 85% is like the highest probability marker I ever get, you know? And I know that it's that probability depending on the factors that are on the table right now. So it, in this moment in time, with these factors on the table, this probability, and you could go out into the parking lot after your session and do make the 20% other choice, you know. And we also have other people's free will, and we have like the fate of the world, which is like the collective consciousness, you know, which turns like it did during the election.
Yeah.
We have some mysterious factors that I just think of the, I just think of it as the hand of God.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, you know, the asteroid smashes down on something or I don't know there's all of these things, your contracts, your free will, other people's contracts, their free will, the fate of the world and the hand of God. Like all of these things kind of make a very complex system that is the future that really operates in real time. Like the future is unfolding in the moments as it's happening.
Right.
So I don't know. I find it quite interesting. I try not to get hung up on, I've seen and sensed when I get a prediction, I just put it, I have an, like in my head, an imaginary file cabinet that I call the X-Files. And if I get something really weird, it goes into the X-Files. And sometimes those things happen and sometimes they never do.
True, true. And so for 2017, do you have any predictions you can share that aren't in the X-Files?
I think they're kind of all in the X-Files, but I'm happy to share them, you know, and a lot of what I said is, you know, that, you know, is what we already talked about, that I kind of continue to see a serious deconstruction period where, you know, when as the power shift happens between the right and left, you know, power structures, there's going to be a radical demolition period that is in itself unpredictable.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So it has, I think things will start one way and end up, you know, I think that there's going to be a lot of curveballs, a lot of surprises, a lot of deconstruction actually all over the planet. I'm a little worried about the European Union right now. You know, if England goes through with Brexit, there are going to be other countries that continue to leave the EU. I think NATO is going to destabilize. You know, I think there's going to be radical shifts of power going on. I think there's going to be extreme weather. Mm-hmm. I do think that this is a funny thing to own up to, but I do think there's going to be I see a possibility, a probability for a real strange curveball coming into being the next 4 years. And it could be a discovery of some kind. I'm really curious about what's going on in the Antarctic as the ice melts there.
Sure.
I think there's going to be some kind of discovery of something that radically changes how we see humanity. Mm. And I don't know if it's ancient civilization stuff. I don't know if it's UFO stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel a vibe for both of probabilities for both of those things to really become real mm-hmm. in the next 4 years and seriously change the paradigm in a way that's not even on our radar at all.
Wow.
You know, mm-hmm. And with this deconstruction, it's always important to remember that we have opportunity,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I think fortunes will be lost. Fortunes will be won, you know, fortunes will be made I think in order to stay strong and healthy during this time, we have to be very adaptable.
Right.
You know, people who can change and bob and weave and change with the times are going to be okay. People and organizations and structures that cannot change, cannot adapt, are going to have a really rough time.
You know, I know a group of women who are actually talking about right now collaborating sort of their incomes and, you know, these gigantic mansions, you see them for sale every 4 feet, at least we do here in the Chicago area. I don't know how it is for you on the East Coast, but, you know, bigger is not better anymore. People don't have that kind of income for their second homes, their third homes, let alone their first homes. And there's a group of women I know that are communicating about the possibility of joining together to take one of these big homes. And it's sort of like a community feel, like making their own apartment once again. Do you see that kind of swell of going back to community and downsizing as something that we could have in our future as well?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. And I think there's going to be kind of a back to the land movement.
Sure.
People are going to go green and have gardens. And my feeling about it is that it will be by necessity,
mm-hmm.
you know? So if global trade becomes difficult, for example,
mm-hmm.
we're not getting strawberries from Chile anymore. We have to
farm.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like gardening, mm-hmm. farming, like more passive energy, alternative energy, downsizing, homesteading even. And I love co-housing. I mm-hmm. think it's a fabulous idea.
Yeah.
And I just think that one of the things that's breaking down is the lifestyle we've lived as Americans. I've spent a lot of time living in Europe mm-hmm. when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the consumerism, materialism, like we're just working ourselves to death to maintain a lifestyle that nobody really even likes. So I think that is one of the paradigms that's going to get smashed. And my sense about it is it will be by force, and I don't mean by threat, but we will be sort of forced into a situation where we have to downsize.
Awesome. We have to adjust. We have to adapt. We can't keep doing the same thing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I think if you are a person that can adapt and can change and like that, it might be an exciting time,
mm-hmm.
of almost fun time. And if you know, I think some of the big companies, that the big old dinosaur types, are gonna, you know, they're gonna go.
Yeah.
And I think change and deconstruction, and I think the world circles through times of construction and stasis and deconstruction, and construction and stasis and deconstruction, and this is like a long, you know, never-ending pattern that we go through. We're in a deconstructing phase, and that's just all there is to it. Like, there's no getting around it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, last night, I had lost this bag, and I was losing my mind over it because I couldn't find it, and I knew it had to either be, you know, in my car or in my house. Or I just had this moment of, So I got quiet, and instead of trying to, you know, increase those cortisol levels, I was trying to decrease them. And so I started breathing, you know, centering myself, all these kinds of exercises that you do for meditation, right? And I asked, and I said, show me where the bag is. You know, just sat there for about 4 minutes, 5 minutes. And then all of a sudden in my mind's eye, like a movie, and that's what happens for me, you know, it's not from my ego when it comes flashing through like a, you know, like a spark or something. was I saw the bag in my friend's driveway. It was the weirdest thing, Lisa. So I'm like, what? And then I remembered I had gone over to this friend of mine's house to drop off some things for her. And in my process of taking out her things, I took that bag out and forgot to put it back in my car. Because 3 minutes later, she texted me and said, my daughter just stopped by to say hi and found your very wet bag in the driveway.
Wow.
Because it had been raining. So, I mean, I'm telling that example so that our listeners can realize the power that we all have. I mean, we really all, if we get quiet and open ourselves up to be the landing field for that, you know, airplane that's coming on the runway, just be the open field and let it show up for you. If you think for a second we need to reach outside of ourselves for absolutely every answer, no doubt we have to go to other people that have information that we don't or skills that we don't. You know, I'm not an acupuncturist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an accountant. I have to get these things outside of myself. But sometimes we also forget the power we have within.
Yeah, that's one of the, I love that example. That's a beautiful example. And I think that's one of the most powerful things we can do when we want to increase our psychic our intuition is we have to make time to listen. Mm-hmm. So we have to have those, that's why meditation is such an effective tool at increasing your intuition because you have to go quiet. And some people do really well with sitting meditation, you know, just the actual quiet meditation. Mm-hmm. Other people have more a meditation process like walk the dog meditation, weed the garden meditation, wash right. the dishes meditation, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
that those times we can become very receptive. And we also have to, if we want to increase our psychic, we have to pay attention to the hits we're getting.
Right.
So, because many people get them and ignore them, and that doesn't get you more, right?
No, shuts them down.
It shuts them down. And the other thing that shuts them down is when we don't act on them.
Mm.
So if you get it and over and over and over again, you don't act on it, that shuts it down too. And I'm not saying you have to, you know, be like crazy and act on like, oh, my angels told me to, you know, that I can fly, so I'm going to jump off the building. No, we don't have to do that. But, you know, we more often than not, mm-hmm. we have to put our money where our mouth is and then we get more. You know,
yeah,
those are the big things, the three big ones, time to listen, you know, actually listening and then acting on it. If we do that, we tend to increase.
Fantastic. I was going to ask you for a nugget that we could take with us. And there you go. You just delivered. You must be psychic.
Hey.
The Sensitive's Guide to Life in 2017, Lisa Campion, coming to the Libertyville, say that five times fast, the Libertyville Civic Center. That's at 135 West Church Street in Libertyville. This is on January 21st from 9 to 4. This is presented by the Present Moment and Sue Opeka over there. So thanks to Sue for making sure that we become versed in Lisa Campion. I'm so grateful for the time today, Lisa. Thanks for doing what you do. And please keep doing it.
Thank you. And right back at you. I'm so thankful for you and what you're doing and keep doing it.
Okay. I will. And we'll continue these dialogues. And I look forward to meeting you very soon. And I hope our listeners go and find you. Are you Facebook, Twitter? Where can they find you the easiest?
Facebook's good. I have an open Facebook page or you can go to my website, lisacampion.com.
Campion. Okay, Lisa, stay spiritual, damn it. And we will be in touch.